Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So when we left on Thursday, obviously you went your way and I went mine. I ended up in a bar with some student from Liverpool. And just at this point, the last train had broken off and the power down and stuff, so they chucked us out at crew and I had like a 2 hour delay till my next train. And I sent you photos, didn't I, of crew station and stuff, and it was absolutely manic.
Which looked like the seventh circle of hell.
It was fucking ridiculous. Yep. Like, it's a train station that looked like the cop's last stand. Do you know what I mean? It was fucking absolutely fucking nuts. And then I'm in there, I'm like, fuck this, I'm going to the bar. So I went to the bar and I get to the front, no car machine. Brilliant, fantastic, thank you very much. Upstairs, got some money out, got back down, queued up again for another 15 minutes, got myself a beer. Some guy comes over, I'm sat on the table for you, sit there, yeah, of course, mate, just sit there. Had a few pints, like, we're talking on and off, he's a student, blah, blah, blah. I'm sitting there looking at my phone, and he stands up, and he does that look over your shoulder, like something naughty's about to happen here, like, he goes and fucking mines, sweeps the bar, doesn't he? Like, three quarters of a fucking pint he comes back with, and I'm still coming back with, I'm looking at my phone and I'm smiling at this point. I'm pissing myself laughing inside, and he pulls his jumper down over his hands and rims his glass like he's a fucking professional glass cleaner now. And starts drinking this fucking pint. These guys were on the way to Wales, Scotland in the rugby. They were fucking hammered, wearing wigs and all kinds of ridiculous time on a Thursday afternoon. They're essentially, they're exactly the type of people you don't nick a pint off.
That lad has got probably got some amazing facial herpes going on right now. Yeah, off the back of that.
Probably, he's not got facial hair, but like me. Yeah. But the second part of my story, I went for a piss, right? And there's a massive queue in the men's toilet. And it sounds no problem. I'm used to Anfield on a match day. I can queue with the best of them for the toilet. And the fella's there, oh, it's like the ladies' dish, isn't it? Which is like the comical,
which is
man
the, line,
shout.
The standard line, like, yeah.
And then I'm having a piss. There's two urinals, one next to each other. They're not the ones that join up. They're the ones that are stood next to each other, and some guy bursts through the door. I'm going to have to go now, lads. I'm going. You're just going to have to let me go. He only barges in onto the cubicle next to me as the guy's standing having a piss. And I'm like, this is not right. And I'm sort of like, I hear him barreling through and I'm panicking in case he's coming to my urinal. At this point, I've stopped pissing. I've got stage fright. I'm like, he's going to think I'm taking the piss here. Do you know what I mean? So I sort of shuffle over and sort of push him that way towards the other guy. And he stands and has a piss in the urinal with the other guy. And I was like, no, it's too much for me. I can't finish this. I'm going home.
So we crossed the streams.
I don't know whether he
did. They have a sword? Did they have a sword fight?
I don't know. What type of a man does that?
A man who desperately needs a wee.
I think he there's a sink there.
I think he did something similar with a poo once at a BDI concert, but that's another story for another day.
It wasn't just one. 13, by the way.
So welcome to everyone to the Red Men TV podcast, episode number 2. For those of you on the redmentv.com and watching this in video form, we're giving you a wave right now. You can see. Actually, this is more for the people who are listening. We're waving to the people who are watching it on the redmentv.com. Anyway, this will be in the
I've listened to a lot of podcasts. I've not heard that joke done that way around. It was much funnier that way around. Right. Everyone always mentions the video people.
Yeah.
But it is.
It's audio description. Just to explain what we're doing for the people who are listening.
It's brilliant.
That gets lost a lot in translation. I think you're right. Got a load of your questions to get through later on. We're going to be discussing, obviously, Liverpool, Leicester as well, which should be loads of fun. We've done an hour on that on the final word, which is tremendous. So we're going to do even more of it now. Tom, can you get me my clock back as well? Yeah, Tom's going to find me my clock and all things will be good. So, yes, first and foremost, before I do ask that, I go to the first question to kick us off. I've badly underbrewed my cup of tea. By the way, we wanted to get this done. You want to go home because you're not well. And I hope you know that I've underbrewed this in the interests of getting through. And then, of course, what happened is Tom spent 10 minutes sticking around.
That's annoyed me that you do that. I mean, it's nice that you do that for a friend of yours. You've not done that for me in any way, shape, or form. You've done that because you shit at making brews.
Oh, no, I had to squeeze the tea bag. Anyway, I had to it's a time shaver. Okay. You can't allow to brew, you've got to...
This is why I stack my toilet roll up next to the toilet.
Stack it? Do you have one of the holders?
Just fold it over and pile it up next to you, so when you're ready, you know what I mean?
At what point of the day do you do this? Oh, whilst pooing?
Yeah.
You're already preparing your bug roll?
Yeah, of course I am. And then it's just the last one, pick it up, wipe, spin, throw, flush, hands, go. It's all about efficiencies, Paul, in life.
That's the toilet life hack. Well done.
There's your underbrewed tea all over the table.
There's my underbrewed tea gone. We do need a bigger table. Again, for those of you listening, the table we're on is really small. So, first question of the week comes from Kyle Spaulding. Kyle T. Spaulding. Or Kyle T. S. Alding, if you will, on Twitter. He asks, if you could go on holiday with one player, who would it be and where would you go?
Ooh, right, okay. So it's a similar vein to last week.
Yeah, like last week, for those who listened last week, we based on the La Manga thing, we had to pick which of the Liverpool players we would want a room with if it was drawn out of a hat.
But this isn't Liverpool. I didn't hear the word Liverpool in that question.
No, you didn't. I mean, do you want to pick a player outside of Liverpool? On the opening question on the Liverpool podcast.
I would desperately like to feed off Pirlo's just cast-offs. Like, because he's getting women thrown at him all day, and I'll happily
Who's
hold on to
throwing the women at him?
Anyone, all of them themselves.
The mothers.
Them picking themselves up and just throwing them at him.
Some sort of large woman launching trebuchet or something
that
like
that.
That
sounds epic, Paul. No, seriously, I'm happy with his seconds, you know what I mean? You know what? That guy must get some women. And fair play to him, he's a talented, good-looking motherfucker. And I would happily go out for a pint with him. You know what? Him, Buffon, some of those, like, Paolo Maldini's, some of those great-looking... Actually, Buffon's not great-looking.
Buffon's a good-looking
good-looking Italian men must just get it, and I would love to get it.
Yeah, I mean, on the off chance that, you know, Pirlo and co are happily married, not to cast any aspersions.
Well, that's even better for me, isn't it?
Well, there you go. Yeah, they need something to someone. You'd be like a shield.
I'd be like
a penetration shield.
A fisherman with a big net as these women are launching themselves. Just grab them with
the
net.
I have this scene. Do you Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves? I think Kevin Costner launches himself over the wall of a castle. I kind of have it. Yeah, it'd be interesting. But in terms of Liverpool players, where are you going? You can be wherever you want to be. It's fine. Listen again.
It's my bad.
You didn't have to pick a non-Liverpool player. And you can be whoever you want.
It's Marbella.
Yeah. Why?
I don't know. I've never been there. I'm going to be lending money off Pirlo. I'd never be able to afford to go to Marbella. It's near Malaga. I've been to Malaga.
So, like, last week, I picked Simon Mignolet as my roommate because he's really boring. But in terms of a holiday, I mean, I don't want anyone active venturey. Don't like that. I don't know. To bend it, I wouldn't mind it being Klopp just for the crack of it. Like, I think he'd be a good, because you go to like one of those like 1830 style places. You go like kind of like you say with Marbella, just somewhere really shit like the Costa del Sol. We're probably shit where they sell Heinz baked beans and Los Cabris fingers.
Chips on your full English breakfast.
Exactly. And all that biff. And I think he'd make it bearable. I think he would make that incredibly
fun. I think going camping with Klopp would be fun, because I think he's the kind of guy who sniffs his fingers after he's touched his bum. And I think I just think that'd be funny to see him do that, because I think he'd go, and you'd be like, he's sniffing his fingers while he's...
If you want that as a guarantee, surely it's Yogi Low you're going for. Just if that's what you're looking for specifically.
Well,
don't
in a camping holiday, not in a kind of Marbella style holiday.
Don't gamble. That's who you're going for. You know that's in his repertoire. Let's start Liverpool. We've done, those of you who watched it, congratulations. The Final Word show, we did the best part of an hour talking about this, but it's worth making mention of it. Obviously, we do that every single week. For people who are new to Red Men TV, and because the whole podcast and thing, it's worth picking up. I think a lot of people, we ask for questions on this because a lot of people saying the same, asking the same sort of things. Why is the form so bad? What's going wrong? Is it time to question the ownership? Yada yada yada. I think first and foremost, this is Liverpool Leicester, and that result is history repeating itself. It's another example of a team that are, you know, relegation threatened, and we've gone and basically, with maybe a touch of disrespect to our opposition, we've essentially given them 3 points. We're handing 3 points out like sweets at a pedo party in terms of like rubbish teams.
Vardy's taken them.
Vardy's taken the sweets from the pedo party and probably taken it to his first party or whatever.
Getting onto the football and stuff, like, it was a terrible performance. You used the word diabolical, and I think that perfectly summed it up in your match reaction, to be honest with you. I think, you know, we played with a naivety that I don't expect from this Liverpool side, but I have seen on occasion this season. It's not the first time that we've played to a team's strengths. Unfortunately, it doesn't look like it's going to be the last time that we play to a team's strengths either. We need to show a maturity about our football, that we understand that we can play in different ways against different types of teams. And one thing that's levelled at Liverpool a lot this season, and you know, we're not the first people to level, and I'm certainly not anyway, is that Liverpool play the same way regardless of their opposition. Yeah. I think Jamie Carragher said it on Monday Night Football last night famously as well. And that is a real shame and a real worry, because I think we've got clever players, we've got very clever footballers, as proven by the fact that they can play in multiple positions around the pitch. Yet even when they are able to play in multiple positions around the pitch, we seem to play in one dimension only, and we make the angles of attack very easy for an opposition defence to sort of counter. We seem to play on one plane almost, and the opposition teams, the really good ones certainly, the likes of Chelsea, the likes of Tottenham, have a couple of different planes that they can play on, and a couple of different avenues and angles to attack from. And Liverpool just seem to be very, very static now, which is crazy to think, because the first 4 months of the season all we saw was fluidity. But we did say at the time, it's organised chaos, and when you break the chaos down, it is organisation.
All part of a plan.
Exactly, and because it's all part of a plan, and because they're not thinking on the cuff and stuff, the opposition defences have got wise to the little tricks that we used to exploit. And in a defensive sense, again, just terrible. You can't believe in Lucas Leiva up against Jamie Vardy in space. It's just ridiculous.
That's the thing. What all this boils down to, and it was mentioned on the telly, and I think Cara said, like, not hanging Lucas Leiva out to dry, he's not picking himself. We've seen plenty of examples where we've seen, look, he's not a centre half, so ... Now I can make excuses for that. Under certain circumstances. So like last season when we played Watford and we had was it Skirtle that got injured? We got injuries or whatever.
Came on, the away game.
Yeah, and Lucas came on at centre-half and he covered and he did a fantastic job. And I think whenever he's asked to deputise, like in the last minute, when, you know, someone pulls out the day before on the morning of the game and you drop Lucas Leiva, and I think he performs admirably. But this is the problem, and you always find this with talk about the rhythm of football and understanding your role, etc., etc. You know, Lucas Leiva now has played enough football at centre half that it's not like a shock, it's not a surprise. So, opposition, it's an issue that our opposition can now plan for and look to target, and I think that's where we fell down, because we did this on the final word, but I think that. I talked about tactically and how we set up and stuff. I just think so many of our problems came from losing individual battles in the defence, and that comes from the fact of the matter is that back four, you know, Klein, Matip, Lucas and Milner, and much like Liverpool in general sense, when it's working, it's great. It covers a multitude of sins when you're playing really well and you're scoring loads of goals. But when you boil it down, that back four, definitely two of that back four, you would not, if you had the money to just go out and solve all your problems, two of that back four would be nowhere near that, that back
so
four.
You're saving Matip and Klein.
I'm saving Matip and Klein, and even then I think Matip still needs a full season to see where he's at, and beyond that, you know, we'll see the best of him next season, I think. And Nathaniel Klein, I think he's brilliant as a right back, but we, you know, again, he's not, depends what you're looking for, of course, like, but he's probably one up there with the best just standard right backs, but I don't think he's not world class, is he? You know what I mean? That's the kind of thing. If for how we play football, etc., etc., etc. I think what I'm driving at, and even include the goalkeeper who I thought was really good, that defence is, it's just not, it's not very good, is it? You know that, and that's where we've fallen flat again. And we've fallen foul of the quality in our squad. Mm. Why have Ragnar Klavan? What's the point of if you can't bring a defender into play and defence, etc., etc.? I think this is where we're struggling, is the strength of the squad overall. We just need some better players, I think, maybe could be the problem.
I think, look, you've made a case there for two of the back four. I'd say that's three of the back five that we're looking to really change. I can see deputies for at least five others, if not. And I say deputies, and what I really mean is challenges for those positions, not like clear backups. I think we need to have a different skill set to come up against different types of sides. And, you know, the Firmino, Mane, Coutinho, as good as it is when it's firing, to just have some variation in the style of play would be great.
The point, I think you're spot on, because here's the point. Are Lucas or Klavan going to play their way in ahead of Matip or Lovren?
No.
You know, so if they're not, I get it, because this is an unusual season to some extent, you know, in terms of having a certain number of players on your books and having to balance player expectation in terms of game time with development, with giving players the minutes they need to become better footballers, etc., etc. So, like, I have no problem with having one of Klavan or Lucas, I think, is acceptable in that situation. And I do wonder, it makes you wonder about the Gomez thing. And again, we've said this in the past, if we're looking at Liverpool as a long-term project, and it means, and Joe Gomez is able to start next season and be that, because I think he's got the tools to be a really good centre-half, a very good footballer for Liverpool. I think he's got the lot. If that's the case, then great. But it's very difficult to disassociate yourself from wanting to, I don't even want the world this season, but I want a degree of success. I'd like us to be able to put our best players on the pitch, and it does make you wonder why. How is our squad just very poorly balanced in terms of quality? It looks like we've got, once again, in a situation where we've got like 12 players, 13, who are first team quality, and then you've got the rest. Now, I'm talking a lot here, but mercifully, a few of those now are on the fringes, are promising young players, which is better than, I think, than being talentless journeymen, which we've had in the past. So I think it bodes well. But I do worry that exactly what you're saying there is that at the minute, the players who should be knocking on the door are not knocking loud enough.
Yeah, they're not even up the garden path, mate. I think one of the things that I'd like to see from this Liverpool side with regards to, and what I'm, sorry, it's not what I'd like to see, it's more what I hope has happened, is that we've gone, let's not spend all our money this season. And this is like my ideal situation. Mm-hmm. Klopp's gone, I think I can get in the Champions League with what we've got, without burdening the clubs with players who are of a quality that aren't good enough for us to exist in that competition and to exist and challenge on multiple fronts. I would love it if Klopp saved that money up and just went balls out. We got in the Champions League and he was like, this is why we're saving that money, because I would have had to buy, let's give an example, Andros Townsend.
Yeah.
When actually, you know what? If I can get in the Champions League with the players that I've got, I can go and get someone much better, someone of Champions League quality. I'm just worried that that's not the case.
Yeah, because we've been in this situation before, and it's like it's that thing of things will be okay when,
when such and such comes back from injury, when we get a new manager, when we get new owners, when we get in the Champions League, when we do this and that. And, you know, there's a lot of there's always factors. And this is the problem. It's always like it's this delayed gratification. Liverpool are going, have gone fucking tantric on this delayed gratification of things coming good. When it comes good, and I'm confident it will. I don't know about the ownership. We'll talk about that in a bit. But the... when it comes good, I'm going to pop every pore in my body. Something is going to explode out of every, you know what I mean? I don't know how I'm going to handle it because of the way they've built up. But I think you're right in that, and I'm hoping you're right in that. It's hard to see this when you're very much mired in a season and when you're performing poorly, as we have been predominantly in this year. But I look back at it and I still think maybe a player in January would have helped alleviate a lot of burden. So let's put a pin in that and put that to one side for one second. Is that you can look at the squad and say, striking the balance, as we've said, between the amount of games that we had. You know, we had a minimum of 40 games to play this season. Mm. We've added 5 or 6 or whatever, you know, whatever on top of that. It added as well on the fact that Klopp's trying to bed in like a core. You know, he wants a core of his squad, and he wants to drill exactly what he wants into them, so that when you start adding to that, you're not reinventing the fucking wheel every summer. You're not getting it in. You're not starting with 11 new players and starting from scratch every single July. So the issue we've still got is that there was a lot of turnover in the summer. There was still a lot of players in. A lot of players out. Loads of players out. And still quite a lot of players in. To start adding to that, you know, and the as you say, with all those factors in, if we'd gone and addressed every one of our major squad issues, tried to get it perfect, so we'd gone and spent £30 million on a left back, and we'd gone and bought another £25 million centre half, and we'd gone and done X, Y, and Z. That's the situation everyone wants and everyone's kind of looking for. But I do just think in terms of how we were set up and what we wanted to do, there was only ever going to be so much that the manager was comfortable doing in one go. And if he's perceiving it as 3, 4, 5 years down the line, he's got the confidence to do that, which is something that we've not seen a lot. Because Brendan Rodgers had a very short contract to begin with as well, you know what I mean? It's very rare. We haven't had a manager who's been given that trust, and whom also we put our trust in, for ages to say, you know, give it 3 years. And I think that's where our chief concerns come of this, is that hopefully you're right, is that we get to this summer and we add some big quality, yeah, to bolt on to what is already a core 11 or 12 really good quality players. You're totally bought into the system, and you're not really, again, you're not starting, it's not year zero come the end of the season again, basically. Look,
I've said it before and I've said it again. Klopp said that he is more interested in developing the players that he's got than buying players, because he knows what he's dealing with, I think, and he trusts that he's a good coach and he's got a good coaching team around him. I wonder whether, and I hope again, that having spent a year intensively training these drills into these players, that come next season we'll be in a better position than everyone else. What will happen is two teams who finish outside the top four, or maybe 3 of the big 7 who fall outside that top four, will panic and change again. And this time I know we'll be in a better position than them, because there might be a change of manager. There'll be certainly a shifting of deadwood. There'll be an influx of new players. Whereas what I don't think we'll have is this mass exodus of players like we had last season.
Well, you've got...
As you say, you're adding those little bits, and you can pick and choose what you want then, and you'll know more about your players, which means that you don't waste as much money in the pursuit of what you're looking for.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's it. I think we might see more stability in terms of manager turnover for the first time in a while at the top end of the table. But again, it's that weight of expectation that... Again, you go out and buy. Yeah, it's a double-edged sword, isn't it? And there is no right answer to it, because it all exists in hypothetics. But let's use Man United and Arsenal as two examples of this. They're top players. If for any whatever reason they don't get into the Champions League this season, whether everyone likes it or not, and no matter how much money they're being paid, no matter who the manager in charge is, agents and players and the players' mates, and they read social media and they see all these things, there will be little doubt to start to creep into their head, particularly Arsenal, because we see it all the time. You've got Alexis Sanchez and Mesut Ozil, who let's be perfectly honest, will move. One of them will probably move this summer. If someone comes in with a mega bid for one of them, don't be surprised to see one of them going. Yeah. And then they're in a position where they're having to replace that, and you've got all the upset that comes with it. What we need to do, and like a perfect world scenario for Liverpool, is to get ourselves in the Champions League by hook or by crook, go through a summer where we only sell the players we want to sell, only buy the players largely we want to buy, and put ourselves in a stronger footing. Exactly what you're saying. That's hopefully something that
it's interesting. Actually, slightly off topic. Did you see the Southampton chairman come out and said that that's what Southampton's plan is going to be this year? So he was talking about Virgil van Dijk and basically warning Liverpool off Virgil van Dijk. And he said, look, in the last couple of years, we've sold our big players. We're now in a position where Virgil has got a long contract with us. He's the club captain, and we want to arrest that sort of slide, and we want to make sure that we keep our players and build from this platform. Which is quite interesting that Southampton have finally decided that enough's enough.
Well, that's what we've seen.
They're not willing to settle, and nor should Liverpool.
Well, we're seeing that, aren't we? We saw that with Everton, you know, with the likes of Lukaku and whatever. They can afford to go, no, it's all right, we've got money now. We don't need to sell people. And they only get rid of John Stones when the timing of it was dictated by themselves. They kept him for another year because they fancied they probably could have just kept him if they'd
and
really
milked it dry. 50 million.
Well, absolutely, 100%. And that's definitely something I think when you're in the tier below, almost we're sort of at the top fringes of feeding into the top, in the top end, there's definitely more, we're definitely going to see more of that, but you still get those at the very, very top end. You've got those elite players, and that's one thing where we could do with more elite players, and I said this on the final word again, Liverpool need more elite players. I hope we grow a few into them, definitely, but we could do with buying one or two just to have, because of all the benefits that come with them. But the problem with those elite players is inevitably they know that they can win silverware.
Yeah,
their talent guarantees silverware, and it's whether they've got the ambition to go and seek it out places. We're again another example where we're kind of okay, but there'll be players at other clubs who will start to agitate, which should be good fun.
I love the idea, taking that, you know, we've got this core group of players, and I've said it, and I still believe it. I think Liverpool will play 4-2-3-1 next season. I think you'll have Jordan Henderson, maybe Gini Wijnaldum as the holding role, and then you've got Mane, Firmino, Lallana and Coutinho fighting it out for a three, and you're dropping Lallana, you're dropping Firmino into the 10, whichever you feel is the right move, and you just drop that elite player that we're talking about. Yeah. That guy who's going to score you 25 goals and put the fear of God into every other team, who comes up against him and goes, fuck, I can't and we've got to defend him, and then there's Firmino, and then there's Mane, and Adam Lallana and Phil Coutinho. That's what it does. Whereas right now you can go, oh well, I think I can stop Firmino, are you alright with Mane?
That's it.
Massive difference,
well,
isn't it?
Exactly that, isn't it? And what Liverpool would need going forward, and whether it, I don't know who that player is, but the profile that we're looking for is Luis Suarez again. Not getting him back, but you know, Suarez was 22-23 when we signed him, so was Fernando Torres. That, you know, that, and another thing worth pointing out again, of course, is that people think of these guys as, at the time, Fernando Torres was probably the best centre forward in the world when he was at his peak with us. Luis Suarez, third best player in the world now, still was when he played for us, but they weren't that when we bought them, which is always always worth remembering. But yeah,
you take a cheeky bid on Aguero.
Yeah,
who you think wouldn't fit our style, but he's got everything else.
Maybe, yeah. It's more that thing. Mane for me is the model in that regard. Is that, you know, someone who's got the physical attributes, who's got the, you know, I think you can take a gamble on the people who've got the right attitude and the right physical attributes first. You trust them to grow into what you need. Whereas we too often get those guys who use Lallana as an example of it. Love Adam Lallana. He's integral to how we play. He's great, but he's one of them that he's had to fight against his physical limitations. Yeah. So he's always his touch is great, but he would be. If he had another yard of pace or 2 yards of pace, he would be playing for Barcelona. I knew you would. Just let it go. If he could complete the 100 metres in another 2 seconds faster than he could, you know what I mean?
He'd be... yard of pace nonsense.
Yeah, he would be a metre more pace. He'd be, a genuine world beater. And that's what we've had too many of in recent years. And it's a Brendan Rodgers legacy of guys who are brilliant at football, but then... the too problem lightweight, the problem too is, slow.
You're right, but it's very easy to throw out there. The guys who have the touch of Adam Lallana and the speed of Sadio Mane are playing for Real Madrid.
Well, exactly, but
that's the problem.
But the thing is, that's what the Real Madrid don't buy those players age 20 and 21. They buy them age 25, 26 for ridiculous money and beyond. That's the thing, is we need to get back to being that club again that goes and gets them before they make that move. You know, it's obvious, isn't it? Rather than, again, that where Liverpool have fallen down, they need to get back into the habit of being a success. It's one of them, you know. A guy should have that. I just want to see pace and power. That's what we need, more, as much of that as we can physically get into the squad as possible, because...
And endurance. I think that's something that we've shown that we need now.
Yeah.
I think you need... I think you're oversimplifying, but your point is right. They're the two key attributes.
Yeah, exactly. I could go through my 25-point ratings out of 20 for me scout settings on Football Manager 2017. But yeah, you know, in a general speaking, athletes first... And who had the bits and pieces on top. And again, Mane, I think Mane will hopefully, when he finishes Liverpool career and moves on, he will fit into the bracket. We'll think of him the same way we think of Suarez, the same way we think of Torres. And we've got a guy.
Except we'll be made up, because he's the guy who stayed here and won us league titles and European Cups, Paul.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Good.
Well, no,
nice chat.
You know what would be nice? Actually, you know what? Fuck that. I want us to get back to the point where we go. Well, in fact, Torres being the perfect example of that. Get back to that Liverpool that goes, I think we've got all we're going to get out of him, and we sell him for ludicrous money, and then they go and lose their legs on other people.
I'd rather us win trophies, but go ahead. My idea was we keep Mane and win the league and European Cup, and yours was let's use him until his legs are out.
That's the same thing. The idea. Well, I'm not saying we don't win trophies.
You didn't say we did.
But it's a given. Oh, yeah. Let's keep all of it as well. We don't. The point is, Liverpool get back to the world where we get we wring every ounce of talent out of the people we want, and then we fuck them off. Get back to being ruthless with our players, rather than being, oh, well, we're not offering success, are we? So, do you want to go move to another club? Oh, go on, Raheem, enjoy yourself. No, fuck off, you dickhead. You fucking stay here till you're a broken cart horse, and we kick you out to the curb, and some idiots like Chelsea give us, you know, ludicrous sums of money for you, etc., etc. Topic I want to discuss with you this week, Chris. So I was listening to the Long Ball Street podcast, which is really good, by the way. If you haven't checked it out, it's on SoundCloud, and I think it's probably on iTunes as well. So the question that Flav posed was, what was the moment where you realised you became a fanatic of your club?
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
As I was listening to it, the more I was thinking about it, and I personally can't define it. I could define it as one moment, and then I'd walk away from here and go, oh, but what about that? And what about that? So what I want is to sort of chart our progression through the sort of the touchstone moments of supporting Liverpool, because it's not a given. You know, your story to how you hear Liverpool fans slightly different to mine, but told, well documented, not relevant, because I think you get your football club, that's one thing, you find a team to support, but at what point, because we talk about this, how your happiness, whilst not entirely dictated by Liverpool's form, there's a percentage of maximum percentage of happiness that I can reach in my life when Liverpool aren't performing well.
10.
It might be 95%. It might be 90%. It might be 50%. There is a ceiling to how happy I can be, and that I can only ever reach 100% happiness when my life's going well and Liverpool are performing. So what are the moments of you being a Liverpool fan from childhood to almost like present day? In chronological, we'll go from youth onwards and see what you can come up with.
So I think, first and foremost, it's a touchstone for me, but it's not a Liverpool touchstone. It's this idea of football fanaticism. Mm-hmm. And it's very, very earliest stages. Now, I had a friend, Stewie Williams, massive, massive blue nose. And when we were growing up, another friend, Craig Melton, massive, massive blue nose. And everything we did was football. Yeah. It was football, football, football. We had an outdoor ball. We had a fucking indoor ball. We had a ball for the garden, a ball for the back garden, ball for the front garden, ball for the roads.
Yeah.
Everything we did, in whatever room in the house, there was a ball that we'd play with that was meant for that room and stuff like that. And, you know, we had those, I forget what they're called, they're not shoot player cards, maybe they were shoot player cards, and we just used to spend hours poring over these things and cards and drawing football kits and all these type of things. So there was this early years football fanaticism, and I've always enjoyed playing sports more than actually watching them, which, when your body breaks down, becomes impossible. You have to flip that, and then you can enjoy sports. But I think when I was around about 7, 8, and my dad going to games, and then I started listening to games on the radio. I remember watching Hillsborough, which is it's a touch point all the same. And then the very first one where I think, wow, this has got me gripped something chronic. I remember listening with my dad to the Liverpool 4, Everton 4, 1991 FA Cup final, fifth round.
The replay,
the 4-4, where Liverpool kept going ahead. And that was the first time I got true pain from it as well, because we drew the game, and then it was only a couple of days later when Kenny left.
Yeah.
And then we got beaten by Everton. And that was the first one where I think it really defined my happiness.
Yeah, it's weird because if regards to football, I was never mad into it when I was little. Like, I had an older cousin who was really, he was 3 years older, so he was well into it. My dad and my uncle used to sit next to each other, and they'd always go. And I remember the late 80s with genuinely thinking that Liverpool went to the FA Cup final every season, because my dad and my uncle would disappear, and I'd go round to my aunties, and my mum and my auntie and the kids would watch the FA Cup final with Liverpool in it. And it's weird how it starts in different ways. Like, my dad would take me to games, and I was never mad into it. Like, I was probably a little bit young to be totally into it. I couldn't sit and watch a 90-minute game of football. It used to bore me. I'd rather play it on the computer or go and play it outside or do whatever. But I remember the 1989 sticker book being well into that, and that was where, in regards to football fanaticism, was collecting the stickers and knowing all the players. I knew every player in England and every player in Scotland, because you used to have the Scottish teams in the back of it as well. And it kind of grew from there. And then I guess it's when you get to, for me, it was when you get to school. And with my junior school, when I was like under, you know, you go from 5 to 10 or whatever, and you, for those outside the country, don't understand how the schooling system at work. But
I'm not sure you got that right either.
When you start 4 or 5, you start in school, and then you go to junior school, you go to 10, it's like 11 when you go to senior school, isn't it? There were no Evertonians in our school, so it was just like a nice existence. And again, you played footy on the yard, and that was when I realised that it was the actual playing football was the best thing you could, the actual best thing you could ever do. Was you'd go for like a parents' evening, and the kids would be just waiting in the yard while the parents went in for a parents' evening, and just a game of footy would break out, and like kids would be taken off and brought back in again. So you had this constant rotating. What side are you on? You're on that side, go on. And you'd be there for like 2 hours playing footy with a constant revolving set of kids. That for me is probably where it kicked off. And that was like, because I remember that, and even like, I think the first FA Cup final, I put it in, but I don't count it because like 92, I got taken to that. I wasn't really that arsed. I was more interested in the sponsor boards revolving than the game itself. And so it was weird. It was actually at that point, it probably wasn't until I got into 11, 12 onwards that I really found a passion for. I was into Liverpool. I loved the concept of Liverpool, but I wasn't passionate about it, about watching the games and being overly obsessed with it, probably until I kind of hit 11 or so.
Yeah, well, the first one for me was, I would have been 9, was that 1991. I've completely missed out the FA Cup final and the programme, because my dad went to the 89 Cup final with a few reds and a few blues and stuff, and he came back with the programme. And I've not looked at this programme in 25 years or however long it's been. There was a fucking thing with a blow-up banana on the back of it. And I just remember I used to look at this programme all the time, like, and just wish that I was there. And much like you, it was the stuff and the culture around football that really enticed me. And my dad got us 2 tickets to the Cops Last Stand, which is why I referenced it earlier on in the show. And being there and going to that is probably, it wasn't my first game, but it's the first game that I truly remember going to.
Yeah.
I don't know, were you there?
Yeah, I was in the main stand.
So we got 2 tickets and we walked down towards the cop, and there's these big banners all over the park, and some of them were moaning that the cop's going, and they'd put like a, I think it was outside the park, and like an RIP spying cop 19 whatever to 1994. And then you get in the cop, and I'd been to games before, but I'd not been to a game that was anything like this, because everything, it felt like what I'd heard and seen growing up was playing out in front of me for the first time.
Yeah.
You know, every single chant that you could possibly imagine, all the great managers coming out before the game, the swaying of the cop and this togetherness. And I didn't watch the game. I really, you're just there as a kid and you're just looking around, trying to take it all in and trying to remember as much as you possibly can.
All I remember about that game is that it was shit. And looking back, nothing sums up what has happened to Liverpool better in 20 years than not winning the last game in front of the old cop, innit?
Take Gerrard's last game as another example of how badly we get it wrong. But at least the fans were up for the Norwich game, and it was Jeremy Gosh with that volley, wasn't it? It was a hell of a volley. The main thing I remember from the game, and I think I remember it more from Match of the Day, if I'm perfectly honest, is that Nigel Clough was goddamn terrible, and he must have had the best pass completion for their side. But I just remember being in the cop and just looking around and just being in awe of what I was part of. Yeah. And that's what kind of football is, isn't it? It's, you're a part of something bigger than you.
Yeah.
And that was, for me, my full indoctrination into Liverpool.
The thing that always sticks out to me, and it's a nondescript feeling, and I couldn't tell you any of the matches that it was involved in, but it was that feeling. We used to go to the game with my dad and, again, my uncles and stuff, and we'd park up the roads, and these houses have all been knocked down and redeveloped now, and there used to be pubs along the walk in. This is like a cop behind the cop end, and there was like a sweet shop, and you stop and get some sweets for the match. And when you could just hear the hubbub in the distance, you maybe see the aurora almost of the cop on the distance for the night games. And as you got closer, and everyone would be walking and talking about the match, having their own little conversations, and it'd just get tighter and more compact, and the levels of people around you build up, and just that noise, and that, like, it's genuine thinking about it, it's making the hairs on the back of my neck stand up. That it's absolutely indescribable, and it's why I always just say it's pseudo biblical, like like a religious experience for me, that walk into the cop on a night game. And that's from like 6 upwards, and that's something that always stuck with me. But in terms of, like, again, becoming totally obsessed with the ins and outs of every single game, and when it starts to affect my mood, it was definitely like, so from like 11 onwards, there was a group of 4 of us, and my 3 best mates were Evertonians, and that was the first
that will affect your mood.
Well, exactly, but that's the first time I'd come into contact really with Evertonians. I told that before, there was one lad who was an Evertonian in my junior school, and he was a bit weird, and no one really liked him or spoke to him. So that was my experience of Evertonians. They were just this little the weird gang of weirdos, like, and I wasn't wrong, as it turns out. But no, my 3 best mates, and this was a period in the 90s when Everton just used to beat us in derbies constantly, and I had to live with that, and having to go into school when they've beaten you, and sit next to them for hours on end, just getting the piss taken out of you. And that was the time when you'd start to play, like getting into the further into the 90s when Championship Manager 96, 97 came out, and that was the one that everyone had. It was one.
Yeah, we used to bring our teams in on pieces of paper and rate each other's squads and look at how many goals and look at their average rating over this many games. It was mental.
And it was that was the point when, as well, when it started to matter, because you needed your team to be good, because if your team wasn't good, you'd get ripped on Monday in school, and it was like that dread of going in. And I still remember when we hadn't won a derby in years, and it was the Fowler white line celebration derby, because we went a goal behind in that, and it was Dakar scored, and then we came back and won it. And I floated on air home, and I ran upstairs, and I had a phone in my room, and I picked it up, but you used to ring home phone numbers, and I knew all my mates' home phone numbers off by heart, and individually went round ringing them when they picked the phone up. I went, like, and they just move on to the next one,
and repeat,
and then go round. Literally, it was fucking glorious. And that, again, probably if I had to pull it down to that level of like total fanaticism, that was the first real point where, that around that age, mid-90s, when I was like 11, 12, 13 and whatever, that was what really kicked it off for me.
Great. And then moving on further from that, I suppose, it's when you start to, the next major thing for me was when you started to get old enough to drink.
Yeah.
And you go and form relationships over footy and booze as well then, and then you start linking these things together, because that was kind of like the missing piece.
Yeah.
You know, I remember semi well, I remember going to the 147 club for the Roma game when we beat them 2-0. And we were sat just in front of the big screen where
is that when the lads kept standing in, people kept standing in front, and then we'd stand in front of them. Oh my God, yeah, absolutely.
And it's those type of memories that hang with me. You know, Owen scored 2 that day. But my biggest memory was I had to look up who the goal scorer was. I remembered that fucking stuff more.
Yeah.
I remembered the guys standing up in front of us. And, you know, and it's you talked about it, was it last week? Yeah, it was last week on this podcast. And you talk, it's about the stories that you can tell, isn't it? And that's kind of what all of these are. They're all stories from us going to do something. Now, I'm sure if you're a fanatic of any sport, you'd get those stories. It just so happens that football's the best sport in the world. We follow the best team in the world, and therefore we've got more stories than anybody else.
It was that around that period, because that was when me and you became mates around that time, when we were like 17. And that 2001, that the treble season, was like, that was different. At that time, I didn't really hang out with the other lads. I started to hang out with you and the other lads instead. And that was the season when I, like, that League Cup final when we beat Birmingham, I went on my own to that. So that would have been 2000. So I was 17. I got dropped off by Stanley Park, right by Goodison, where the coach was. Got a coach down on my own. I had me Walkman with me and a bit of dough in my back pocket. And I went to Cardiff on this coach, on me Todd. Got in the ground like 4 hours before kickoff, and they were doing like loads of random games. So I had to stick it in a hole on a thing that was covering a goal, and like the halfway line challenges and all the biff that they put on cup finals in between. And that was that season, because that was the one where I went to that one on my Todd, and seeing that and winning that, and having, you know, to go out my way to go and do that on my own as well, which I'd never done anything really like that prior to it, and then kicking on to that was then the FA Cup final as well. Me and my dad went to that time, and we got the train that time, and it was fucking horrendous. They like literally wheeled out every train that they could find. And like they got the diesel trains. Well, they've got like the train museum and crew, and I genuinely felt like all the ones that you see in the sidings just melting away. Like they pulled all them out. They were like, it was like wooden, like Thomas the Tank took us to Cardiff essentially.
Nice.
And having that memory, and that was the first again. That was because it was that first taste of glory, because we won the League Cup in 95 or whatever. It was that of the first time you had that experience of, wow, Liverpool are brilliant. Loss.
We go on and win. Yeah.
And then we went, and then we all got together and watched the UEFA Cup final, and that was the one where
that was the one where you went home stressed.
When the game, the final whistle blew, and I went home went straight home and went to bed and went to sleep because I was in pieces at the end of that. But that was then. So that was at the next chart for that was that game, because that was the our first sense of, as Liverpool fans, yeah, were like, great team, glory, something to tell.
It was different as well, though, wasn't it? Because it was a European trophy. And, you know, as a Liverpool fan, I'd not remembered any European trophies. Yeah. I was too young for the last one and stuff. So that one felt like something. It felt like, because we won all three cup competitions that year, that we were going to go on and win the league the next season.
Yeah.
As it turns out, it took me and you to do that. who'd have thought it? But obviously, you know, I don't want to talk too much about, like, Istanbul's and stuff, so... What I will say now is, and I've said this before to you, I don't know whether I've said it on the Red Men in any way, shape or form, but I'd given up going to the finals.
Yeah.
I don't know, until I read an article a few weeks ago, and it changed my viewpoint now too. I've been to three finals. We've lost all of them. Never won a trophy. Never seen Liverpool win a trophy live. I went to the League Cup last season. Man City lost on penalties. Yay. Went to the Chelsea final. Was that 2012 or 2013?
Something like that.
We lost in that one.
Yeah.
And I've been to the European Cup final. Sorry, not the European Cup final, the UEFA Cup final. Europa League 12, final last season. Got to see Sevilla beat us. So this is the thing, and this is what will get me through from now until the end of the season, bringing it back onto the present day, is it's the hope that keeps you going.
Yeah.
It's not anything else. And this is what's changed my mind. I'm not going because Liverpool keep getting beat when I go, and it's some kind of weird thing where I have to touch wood and all this type of stuff. It's not about that. It's about going, because when I eventually see Liverpool win a fucking trophy live in the flesh, my God, it's going to be spectacular.
Yeah,
I mean, there will be odes written about the amount of jizz that are going to come out of my body.
It's what I'm saying. Isn't it? Like, I've said this before. That's why the league for me, because I've been, like, you know, I'm lucky enough that it, with my own two eyes, I've seen us lift the league title, although albeit I was very, very young for that game. I've, in the flesh, I've seen us win two FA Cups and a League Cup, and then, you know, I've been with you for those other finals that we've lost. I'm glad I've got that. You know, that's probably what keeps me on an even keel. But yeah, you're right, that if I saw us win a Premier League, genuinely it would be.
Do you remember when we celebrated the was it the treble when we were on top of Owen's roof?
Yeah, that fact, you know, there's a great part of that, and maybe it is that, I think for us, maybe it's because of our age and stuff, it has to go back to the treble season, doesn't it? Because people old enough to remember, like, when we did open top bus tours because we were good, we paraded the three trophies and we went to the Chilwell Five Ways, and we got up onto Owen's roof, and it was boss, we were like, no one there, we got a really good view, and then we kind of got bored waiting for it to turn up, so we ended up on ground level as it was coming back. It was really poor. I was literally on the road on Queen's Drive with my hand on the I could have been run over very easily. But yeah, that we've got, that's the thing about the whole thing, isn't it? About where it comes down to is having those experiences that you come.
That's why I think, you know, the social media side of Liverpool fandom at the minute is it's a hard place to be, because you forget that there are a generation of 15 and 16 year olds who are fanatical about football.
Yeah.
Because we've just worked out that was, you know, we were fanatical at that age.
That's formative years, isn't it?
Like, yeah. I've got an FA Cup and a League Cup. And they're too young to remember the league, the FA Cup. Mm. So all we've got in their mind is a League Cup in their lifetime.
Well, this is it. If I think
that's why that's why they find it difficult to deal with Liverpool being shit. And why I think, you know, when you get a bit older, when you've seen everything under the sun that can happen in football, you're a bit more laissez-faire.
Well, yeah, exactly. And I think you've got it. I mean, it's helped. I think it's probably helped local Liverpool fans that Everton are shit.
Yeah.
And they're not, because if they were winning silverware, I think it would be better. Yeah. And if they've been beating us in derbies, they would be struggling to handle it. But you're right, is that having the silverware to go, look what we did, we're still boss. I can't imagine how I would have handled it if we'd only won that League Cup in 95, and then because then we lost the FA Cup final the next season to United, of course. If we'd then not gone on and had the treble or whatever, I would probably be loads. And I think that's where we're lucky to some extent, is that by comparison to people who are maybe 10 years older than us, you know, it's been a paucity by comparison to people who grew up with, properly grew up
your dad,
in the 80s.
That's why I love talking to your dad.
Exactly. But, you know, those, we've not seen Liverpool anywhere near their height, you know, what they were, and yet we've seen enough to sustain us to some extent. So you're right, I do genuinely feel sorry for people who are in the teens or whatever, who, and because Liverpool's become a bit more global since then, we didn't have to deal with fans of other clubs. You didn't know him. You never met anyone who supports another club until you got to like 18, or you maybe go visit family or whatever.
We became students.
Yeah, exactly. And so you wouldn't have to deal with that. Right? So I do feel sorry for people, but you know, people need to find a way to get over that. That was interesting. That was really good. We'll do more stuff like that, I think, in the future. So we've got some questions. We will be doing an extended version of this for listeners, and you want more of this kind of stuff. As we said, we were doing the video for the subscribers on the website. We do your questions, and we do some extra ones as well to make it worthwhile for the people who so wonderfully donate to the Red Men TV cause. It's time for Get in the Bin. Those of you who missed last week, the general concept is pick one thing from Liverpool culture to put in the bin. Room 101 style.
Go on, Paul. What are you putting in the bin this week, mate? So, and it's from Liverpool culture.
So it's not something that's massive. It's not something that's as prevalent at the moment. But one thing that from Liverpool culture that's there, and I hope never to see again, and it is that moment when Raheem Sterling came on the pitch as a 16, 17-year-old boy and received a 45,000 people standing ovation. That needs to get in the bin and never, ever return. And this is the problem with this, of course, is this is modern football. This is LFC TV's fault, because you can now watch academy games and you can watch these games. And they're obviously trying to get value for money out of what they offer. Listen, I understand that. But the fact that we're able to watch all these games and the details are all there. I mean, we're talking about an era where we come from, where like Liverpool friendlies, Liverpool friendlies were never filmed or televised. You wouldn't even get you barely get a match report. You might get a score in a newspaper, to the point now where every aspect of Liverpool is so well documented that you just highlight reels of kids who are 16 years old who have never and will never kick a senior football for Liverpool. So what we need to do is get back to a world, and we can't delete that stuff. We can't go backwards. It'll never happen. You can't put the genie back in the bottle. But what I wanted to get to a position is where we can just embrace young talent and be excited to watch them play again, and not expect these kids to come out and be the next ... Because we didn't do that to Michael Owen. People always refer to Michael Owen being 17 or 16, bursting onto the scene. He was brilliant. He was a unique talent at the time, and he was just one of those freaks that was totally ready for it. I sincerely hope that we can just get, you know, if we see the likes of, whether it's Woodburn or whether it's there's the kid whose name completely escapes me now, who's playing for the unders at the minute. He's playing up front. Now there's a kid, he's a bit younger, isn't he? He's only 16, and he's people are screaming at their phones right now saying this is his name. It'll come to me at some point, but anyway, there's this kid, and he's Brewster, Brewer, yeah, something like that. Everyone should be like me, and he is being touted as, like, he keeps getting hinted at by Klopp, and the journalists hitting him as him being the next great thing. If he comes in, let him just come in and see what he can do. Let's not put all this fucking shitty
pressure. I like that as a shout. I think it was far too much pressure put on Raheem Sterling, but you know what alleviates that pressure in this iteration of football, because it's changed since Michael Owen came in, but what Owen did have in front of him was a star player in front of him, and Robbie Fowler.
Yeah.
And that's where I think a lot of the pressure came from Raheem Sterling. It was poor form by the first-teamers, and it was the fact that they felt like he could make the difference. Yeah. Now, regardless of whether you think he can make the difference or not, you don't give an untried, untested player, a standing ovation. Again, is it something that your dad has always said, isn't it? That he doesn't. Is it your dad that doesn't agree with the standing ovations?
Like, unless you've literally, like, scored a hat-trick and scored that, you know, and carried the injury throughout the whole game, no standing ovation from him. My dad's very, funny, he's sit next to him when I was a kid, and you learn, like, behaviours and how to behave at the footy, which is also something that's been lost along the way, sadly. But, like, I always got the impression that if my dad clapped something,
it was really good.
It was, you know, you were totally worth it, which is, again, you learn behaviours now, like, you're clapping the opposition and stuff like that. Someone, if it got a clap off my dad, then it was the most deserving of a clap there's ever been. But yeah, the Sterling stuff is exactly right. We started with that, and then we continued to heat pressure on him, and it's the club's fault and everything around it. They built him up as this amazing thing. It was showcasing that they scored 4 or 5 or whatever in a youth cup game.
Yeah.
And that was everywhere, and you go, wow, look at this kid, can't wait for him to break through. And people can't delineate between youth football and senior football.
There's a weight of expectation that's placed on these players, and it becomes hard to get rid of. I mean, look, Raheem Sterling was an incredible talent, and is a very, 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 very good player, mm-hmm. and he will go and achieve great things. But think of the expectation that we put on Jordan Ibe as well.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Was there any need for all of that?
He's
shit?
The next his pressure and hype was defined by fucking Sterling. You know what I mean? It started with him, and it's fine. We've got, don't worry about Sterling, because we've got Jordan Ibe. Absolutely, absolutely ridiculous. The example again. I hate the fact that on different formats of Redmen this week, I keep using Man United as examples, and it's sad. But look at how they've handled Marcus Rashford this year. Mm. It's a year. It's only been a year since he made his first team debut, and everyone was raving about him. And he went to the Euros in the summer, and he could have come back and been like Michael Owen, World Cup 98. You know, people could have been going, "Oh my god!" And all the public eyes on him. Whereas what they've done is they've just pulled him out. I couldn't tell you how good a season or bad a season he's had, because he's not filtered into my life, because he's not doing it every week. They're just able to use him as a talented young player. Let him develop, let him learn. Exactly what you're saying, let him learn off your Zlatans and your Matters and all that kind of stuff and your Roonies, and be a better player for it.
This is the one example of where I think you've held Manchester United up as an example when they probably shouldn't be. And let me tell you why. It's because Mourinho's got a fucking really big chip on his shoulder with young players,
yeah.
and he's never actually developed young players. And you could be right. He could well go on and use this, but the likelihood with Mourinho looking back over the rest of his career is he just doesn't like fucking young kids and he don't win him trophies.
I'm glad he doesn't like fucking young kids, if I'm perfectly honest. But that is crossed a bit. No, yeah, maybe you're right in that regard, because I think you can look at the example of like Martial. I think he's being used very well, etc. But whether by accident or design, the fact is there would have been a temptation for someone so talented and so promising. He could have jumped ahead of any number of players, and you know, and he could have paid. Whereas they've not. They've gone, no, I want X, Y, and Z, and it's meant that he'll get a few years out of the spotlight, particularly because England, the press is so desperate, aren't they, to build these kids up, to knock them down.
The focus on Theo Walcott again.
Oh god, exactly. So time for your questions. Thanks to everyone who's tweeted in, as always, at the Redmen TV, if you're interested in sending a question in for us. We got a load, because we're calling this post Leicester. All the questions were just like, talk about how shit it is, why is it so shit, talk about this and that. So there are a few of them, but I did also ask for some more fun questions, which is where the opening question for the week came from. We'll work through a few of these, and then, again, for those watching on the redmentv.com, we'll do some extra stuff at the end just for you guys, so stay tuned. Stay tuned for that. Listeners, I'm looking at the camera and I'm winking. First question then, Chris.
It was an extraordinary wink.
NIDLP geek. What do you put on your pancake day pancakes?
Oh, that's...
It is Shrove Tuesday,
It is Shrove Tuesday. Now, my wife's very much a lemon, and she'll get kind of a gal. I find them quite boring, to be perfectly honest with you. I like Nutella and ice cream. I'm a fucking big kid.
Wow.
Going hard.
My ideal way of eating food is buffet style. I like a little bit of everything. So in the pancake regard, I don't have one favourite type of pancake. I like to mix it up. So I like to go for the... I like to make sure I've exhausted every possible combination. So that's sugar, lemon and sugar, lemon, jam and lemon, jam, lemon and sugar, whatever. Get every possible, every possible variation.
This is a man who doesn't know what he wants. This is what this is.
No, I know what...
No, it's not. You think you do, but you don't, because you don't have fucking lemon and jam on a fucking pancake.
Have you never had it?
No.
Well, then you don't fucking know.
Because you don't have it. Nobody should know what it's like.
You're limiting yourself.
I'm not limited. I've got taste buds, and they work. You're limiting yourself with your shitty taste buds. Yeah, it's come to that. Yeah, I'm dissing your taste buds on a podcast.
Yeah.
Who knew?
I, like I say, I
It's the man I caught eating fucking noodles with crackers, by the way, one day.
Variety is the spice of life.
You'd run out of bread and you know it.
Yeah, whatever. That's it. There's times for putting
beans, into your baked body. Beans, noodles, and dry Jacob's crackers you were eating.
I'll give you the.
Would you trust this man? No one's answering.
The answer's no.
But the answer's no.
Yeah. I had very little money at the time. There's a thing of you eat what you've got or you eat nothing. There's an important lesson in that for everyone. Listen at home who thinks that we're some sort of highfalutin big Charlies with regards to food. Well, one of us. I'd have no whatever you said, Nutella and ice cream, that would be spun, no problem.
Nutella and ice cream's a winner, by the way.
No problem with any of that as a thing. But like I say, if you have pancakes so rarely that I see no sense in limiting yourself to one type of pancake.
It's a good point. Has anyone ever had pistachio crema though? Because there's something that I've not had on a pancake, but I am going to have on a pancake tonight.
That's the thing. It sounds expensive.
You get a little jar, it's about, I think it's probably about 150, 200 grams. Get them shipped from Italy for £9. Yes, I do. I'm sorry. Right, they're fit. So when we went over to Rome a few years ago, it's what they have in the croissants quite often. It's just a pistachio crema. It's like a pistachio version of Nutella without the chocolate. It's absolutely incredible. So we have croissants quite often with pistachio crema in Casa de Pejach.
What wing of your house do you eat this?
The left.
Yeah, and that's the thing for me is that if you have pancakes once a year and I want to try a different thing, fuck waiting a year to try a different type of pancake.
Pancakes more than once a year.
Not pancakes. Not like,
what do you mean, American pancakes?
Not like crepes.
Okay.
Maybe I would do it periodically, but not really. It's like Christmas. Would you get one big present or do you get a bunch of different things? Now I know some people you'd be all in on maybe one big present.
Oh, I got a pan last year.
Yeah, for how much?
£200.
Fucking hell. But the point is that therein lies the difference in our.
But it's a Moviel. It's a copper pan.
Oh, absolutely.
Lasts me my entire life. Oh. I can cook some amazing shit in it.
Of course it will until your kids get to teenage years and
I beat them over the head with it.
Use a scourer on it or something.
They better fucking not.
Yeah, exactly. And they will. Because what's being a dad's all about.
I'm going to fucking pan nice things.
But it's the difference. That's what I'm saying for me. That's it. I would rather have 50 little prezzies to open than one mega one. And therein lies
the I mean, it would have been nice if I'd had some chocolate in my pan or something. But no, it's just a pan.
It's a bottle of olive oil.
I love my pan. It's now my third one I've got. In fact, it's my fourth.
So bringing this crashing back to a sad, crushing reality, John O'Sullivan, core belly red. Is there any chance you'll stop being so defensive of FSG? They don't deserve it. And then an A-OK.
I actually talked about FSG for the first time on Twitter this morning. I gave exactly where I am. And, you know, I've said to you today as well, I think I'm not FSG in. And I'm not FSG out. I'm right down the centre right now. Yeah. I am waiting for something to happen. And by that, I don't mean Liverpool to win or lose football matches. Mm-hmm. By judging FSG, I'm going to judge them on what they can do. For example, they've just put in a new CEO of Liverpool. That's something that I'll judge FSG on.
Yeah.
I won't judge FSG on how Jurgen Klopp's football side do against Leicester on a Monday night in Leicester, because that's not what FSG are controlling. Yeah. Ultimately, long term it is, but when the manager turns around in January for me and says I didn't want to sign anybody, then you can't blame FSG for that. So right now, I'm sorry, there's loads of people out there who say that we're too liberal with our talk on FSG. I'm going to end that. I'm not going to be from now on. I'm going to talk about it as much as I want to talk about it, but I will judge them on things that they control and not things that Klopp and the players control.
The difference with me is I don't think I've defended. People have opinions on stuff, and I think a lot of time if you don't buy into that opinion, then you're seen as being, if you're not with us, you're against us. Whereas I've said this before, I don't really care about the ownership, and I don't mean that to say like I'm being blasé about it, because I come back to it, you know. People maybe didn't follow the channel back in the day, but you know, when we went through the ownership protests, we were the only media outlet giving them any coverage. We were the only people there with a video camera, talking to people who are protesting and getting their opinions out there, and you know, and looking at that. Nobody did that. So I'm not. Here's the thing. I'm not against, if it's horrendous, I'm not against getting back on the barricades. I'm not against getting back on the picket line and getting back on the front line and getting back on marches and whatever. Yeah, I've done it before, and if it needs to be done, I'll do it again. My point is, and I say this work when Liverpool are going bad, it's I have a more of a laissez-faire attitude to life. I have no passion either way with FSG, if I'm perfectly honest. My only thing of it is I think it's a specific defense of FSG, because it could be anyone. It doesn't have to be them. It doesn't have to be those people involved. It's just that there might be better owners for Liverpool, and if they present themselves, then great. Yeah. I'll be all in on that. And if I feel there's reasonable options out there, and equally if I feel that they're absolutely genuinely fucking good, and some people might believe that, but I can only compare it to what I've seen in my experience of football, and not just at Liverpool, but looking at other football clubs and looking at clubs that have been horrendously mismanaged. And I have a sliding scale on things, and I don't know. Maybe FSG will fall into the line that Steve brought in the other week on one of the shows, and he's like a minion, and he said, just good enough to get you beat. And maybe that's where FSG are. I can't see the woods from the trees, because maybe for me I need it to be glaringly bad. And maybe the people who are anti-FSG, maybe they are visionaries, maybe they see through it all, and maybe they can see. Maybe they're the people who see the iceberg coming. Maybe they're the people on the deck of the Titanic screaming at the captain to tell him to fucking turn around. I don't know that. And again, it could be that I'm totally blinded by it.
But
I wouldn't know. And nobody really knows ultimately, because there are, for every person who's totally staunchly against it, I don't say that there's people who are staunchly for them. I really don't think there are. I think there's people who've got like that agenda. I don't think there's a similar agenda. I think John Stewart did it really well when he went on Fox News a couple of years ago, and he said, the guy on there accused him of the left-wing agenda, and he said there is no left-wing agenda. It's because there's a right-wing agenda, people who have that assume there must be a counter one on the other side, because why would there not be? And I think that's where people fall down. People presume, because we're not like out there going, fucking FSG, look at everything that's going wrong, that we are staunchly defending them. It's simply not the case. It's just that there's just been, I see all the things that people are in, I read people's thoughts, I hear people's opinions on it. I've not seen enough anyway to pick up either
strain of any of the arguments and start pretty much arguing for or against it. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's both ways, and that's why I'm indecisive on it, because you know, you can talk about the net spend and stuff, but you can see that people talk about trophies. Here's a great example of it. Yeah. How many trophies have we won under FSG? Well, we've won one trophy under FSG, haven't we? Mm-hmm. But you know what, we were close to a league title. Like, desperately close to a league title, close to a European trophy, and close to another League Cup. Yeah. And on any given Sunday, they could have gone all the other way. Yeah, exactly. And we'd be sat here with a Premier League title in our belt, and who knows how many more since. Mm-hmm. So, you know, FSG didn't control that Gerrard slip and all that went with that at the end of that season. They didn't make us miss penalties in the League Cup, and they didn't make us capitulate in the European Europa semi-final. So there's things that FSG have done well, and there's things that they've done really badly.
Yeah.
I actually think that, you know, they should have been much stronger when Brendan Rodgers came in. If they wanted the direct of football, they should have put it in place. Yeah. You've got to have the courage of your convictions. Yeah. They never.
Yeah.
And they trusted into Rodgers, and that was a mistake that they've made.
Yeah.
I still think they're paying for it to this day, actually.
I much prefer, and Jürgen Klopp's a step in the right direction. I want people who know what they're doing now. They're not learning on the job, and I think FSG have had to learn on the job. Yeah. And unfortunately, given that the whole Hicks and Gillette thing set, how many years that set us back, that happened at the worst possible time in Liverpool's history, and the worst possible time in the history and development of football, because for a start, David Moyes was too slow to move on.
Yeah.
You know, so we allowed the Abramovich era. Well, exactly. But this is the point. We allowed the Abramovich era to happen around us without reacting to it. We had to react. We weren't proactive. We chose the wrong owners. We had a foundation of a potentially brilliant football team. We had a great manager. I know there's people who will disagree with that, but that's whatever. it was what it was. 2008, 2009 was a stupendous side that was running in the right direction. We were competing in the Champions League. We were the highest ranked team in Europe. And then the legs were completely swept from underneath that team. And then what happened is FSG were not right. We're not the right people to come in at that point. They were right in so much as, listen, they came in and they paid the money for the club and they brought it out and they saved us from administration. That, you know, that maybe there were other options, maybe they were, I don't know. But regardless, they did that. That just happened. That's a thing. Liverpool didn't have to go bust. Liverpool didn't have to suffer a points deduction. Liverpool didn't have to suffer going down a league or having to reform as a Phoenix club or anything like that, which we've seen happen, you know, all across world football. That's been happening in the last 20 years. So that stuff being what it is, but it's just happened. It's just Liverpool for the last 30 years are just a team that's just been too late to when things have changed. Yeah. Man United floated on the stock exchange at a time, went to capitalise on their rise into the Premier League, which gave them more money than everyone else to totally dominate. Liverpool stayed as a limited company, as a private limited company underneath the Moors ownership and whatever, and were never able to capitalise on that boom. So we were always playing catch up, and then we just lost. We're 10 years behind the likes of Man United.
And the thing is, the bubble will maybe burst over the next few years, and we'll always probably stay behind in that regard. And that's the worrying thing, isn't it? You know, Manchester United, their finances have almost increased exponentially each year, whereas ours have probably been like a steady increase. Mm-hmm. And so every year we're getting further away because of that inability to react fast enough earlier on in the Premier League years and stuff. And look, getting back onto the FSG stuff. We'll talk about this a lot more over the coming podcast.
Well, we did a good hour on it, didn't we, a couple of weeks ago, which I thought was really interesting in regards to that, the court documents and all that kind of stuff. So we've done a bit, and you're right, we'll definitely do more, because we're not going to answer this in one question in a segment on a podcast. But the major issue is that thing, that FSG were poorly set up for what we needed them to be when they took over.
The thing is, what they've done is what we're accusing Liverpool of being poor at. They've seized an opportunity because, for business reasons, I believe anyway. But that's what Liverpool were really bad at during those mid-90s and early 2000s, is seizing those opportunities. And look, they know, and I think they know where they've gone wrong, and I think they're looking to address that. Whether you believe that or not is totally up to you. I totally get that. You've got to have your own opinions, and you've got to formulate your own opinions. I don't want to sway anyone either way.
Yeah.
But equally, nobody's going to be swaying me on mine.
Well, we want, Chris, ultimately, the ownership issue is rendered completely moot by success on the pitch. Yeah. What it boils down to, and this is why what I hate, and this is why I don't like talking too much about this stuff, because it can't be answered, and you're better off planting yourself in the negative camp, because we've said this before, because you're more likely to not win anything in a season than you are to win something, considering how competitive so many competitions are. If Liverpool just need to win some fucking silverware, you know, and get themselves back at the top table. If they do that, I think most of these criticisms will die off. I mean, you know what? Maybe new better owners will emerge when Liverpool are a shinier prospect. The problem is, of course, if you don't believe it's case, what you'll sit in the thing and people will go, well, that will never happen with these owners because they're not prepared to financially back the manager to make these things happen on the pitch. And I can see that because, as we've said already, it feels like we are slipping away from this. These shining lights, these bits of silverware, these great moments of success and glory are becoming fewer and farther between. So I can totally buy into why people might think that. It's just like the problem is with football, it's a leap of faith. At the moment, I don't think it's so bad that we need to get out there, we need to get the pitchforks out, and we need to get the placards out, and we need to start protesting it. But if it gets to that stage, like I say, I'll be the first one on them.
Yeah.
I'll be the first one on the front line. But right now, let's just hope. I think what we should all hope, whether I hope that no one has such a deep-rooted agenda, one way or the other, that it would, that if Liverpool were able to make a success of it on the pitch with the current or the current change in structure, whatever, that they would continue to think it's shit and needs changing. Hopefully, we can all be unified by if fingers crossed, it starts to work on the pitch. We can all be unified under that banner for the change, because that's what it's all about. We shouldn't have to worry about ownership. We shouldn't have to worry about who the CEO is.
It's hard enough worrying about the 11 players on the pitch and what they're doing, isn't
it? It's hard enough worrying about what your lucky pants are for this week, you know what I mean? It's all that shite. So, yeah, listen, with that, that's been great. I've thoroughly enjoyed that.
Good
kiss. We will wrap up there. For those of you just listening to the podcast, thank you very much for joining us. More of these coming, of course, on it.
Yeah, we're definitely going to try and get it on iTunes over the next 7 days as well. So thanks for bearing with us on that.
If we do get these on iTunes, please make sure that you give it a 5-star rating and leave a review as well. The podcast, that would be absolutely magnificent.
And if you can rate it and on this, do it on that as well.
Go for it. Absolutely. If you are watching us on the redmentv.com, stay tuned. We're going to be answering some more of your questions momentarily. But yeah, thank you very much, podcast listeners.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
it. Coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
It's been a pleasure. Everyone keep their heads up and walk on, Reds. Walk on.